Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English. On today's program, you will hear stories from Dan Friedel and Dan Novak. Later, Faith Perlow describes the differences between the phrases never mind and it doesn't matter. We close the show with part two of Edgar Allan Poe's The Fall of the House of Usher. But first, Elon Musk said Friday that his $44 billion deal to buy Twitter was temporarily on hold. The Tesla founder and billionaire said he was waiting for more information on the numbers of the social media company's false or spam accounts. Musk linked his Twitter message to a Reuters report from May 2nd about Twitter's daily active users in the first few months of 2022. The report said Twitter estimated that false or spam accounts made up less than 5% of all users. Musk also said Friday he was still committed to buying Twitter. Stock in Twitter and Tesla moved in opposite directions after Musk's statements. Twitter shares were down to $38.06 in pre-market trading in New York. That is below the $52.20 per share offer from Musk. Shares of Tesla, Musk's electric car company, went up about 5%. Musk has already sold off more than $8 billion worth of his Tesla shares to pay for the Twitter purchase. Twitter did not immediately answer requests for comment. Susanna Streeter is an analyst at Hargreaves Lansdown, a British financial service company. She told Reuters that Musk clearly would have already seen Twitter's estimated number of false or spam accounts. She said his tweet Friday may well be more part of the strategy to lower the price he will have to pay Twitter. Dan Ives is another analyst. He closely follows the financial activities of both Tesla and Twitter. He said, "Many will view this as Musk using this Twitter filing spam accounts as a way to get out of this deal in a vastly changing market." The agreement to buy Twitter does not permit Musk to walk away from the deal because of a poor business environment, such as a drop in advertising or a drop in the price of Twitter's stocks. Musk is also required to pay Twitter $1 billion if he does not complete the deal. Musk has blamed Twitter for letting the number of spam accounts rise. And he said if he buys the company, he will defeat the spam bots or die trying. Musk has also been critical of Twitter's moderation policy. Earlier this week, he said he plans to end Twitter's ban on former U.S. President Donald Trump when he buys the social media company.
A leader of the United Nations Food and Agriculture Program, FAO, said an already existing food crisis in Africa is getting worse. Abebe Haile Gabriel is assistant director of the program. He said the war in Ukraine is to blame. We have a very grim outlook going forward, he said of the food supplies in some African countries. He noted that about half of the continent's 54 countries depend on Russia and Ukraine for wheat, and over 11 of the countries import fertilizer from Russia. Even before the war in Eastern Europe started in February, food prices in Africa were rising. The FAO said the cost of food staples rose 23% last year. That is faster than any year of the last 10. Many African nations depend on supplies from the World Food Program. Thompson Peary of the WFP said the costs for the program are rising as more people need aid. The cost of grain in North Africa is increasing because those nations import a lot from Ukraine and Russia. In other parts of Africa, people can no longer easily buy cooking oils made from soy, corn, and sunflower seeds. For Edwin Dapi of Zimbabwe, it is getting hard to feed his wife and four children. Dapi looked for vegetable oil at a food store in Harare. The 2-liter bottle costs about $2.76. His job pays him about $50 per month. A 2-kilogram bag of flour costs more than $1, Reuters reported. As he looked at the prices, Dapi said, "I keep hearing it's because of Ukraine, but I don't know what that has to do with us." Africa already has a food shortage, experts say, because of the effects of the COVID-19 pandemic, military conflicts, and bad growing conditions because of climate change. Zimbabwe is one of the African nations having trouble feeding its people, along with East African countries, Kenya, Ethiopia, Somalia, and South Sudan. In West Africa, military conflicts in Burkina Faso, Mali, Niger, and Nigeria have created a food crisis. The Western nations are also dealing with floods and droughts. For a short time, Kenya felt safe from rising prices because it made food deals with several countries last year. Kenya made the change when Russia increased export taxes. Kennedy Nyaga of Kenya's United Grain Millers Association said Kenya should have enough wheat to last until September, but it already ran out of maize, also called corn. The association is asking the Kenyan government for permission to import 360,000 tons of maize without paying import taxes or duty. The group said the price of maize went up about 60% since December. A closer look at Zimbabwe shows the potential for a long-term food crisis, as it is not as well prepared as Kenya. Food production has gone down over the last 20 years due to changes in farm ownership, economic problems such as inflation, and drought. The people there are already poor, as the country's National Statistics Agency says. About half of its 15 million survive on less than $2 per day. They are struggling even more since March, when the country's grain millers raised prices for wheat flour and maize by 15%, noting increased food prices because of the war in Ukraine. The FAO said Zimbabwe receives about 20% of its wheat supply from Russia and Ukraine. While the government says there is enough maize and wheat for this year, the Millers Association approved another price increase in April. The group said it is looking for more grain so there can be enough until the harvest in October. I'm Dan Friedel.
Americans in greater numbers are buying used clothing. Fans call it vintage clothing. They believe buying old, used clothes can save money. They also consider it good for the environment and stylish. Vintage stores sell clothes from previous time periods. The stores often carry famous brands and sell them at low prices. Vintage clothing has been on the rise for about 10 years. It is driven largely by a new generation of people who are concerned about sustainable ways of living. That means they want to waste less and use natural resources carefully. In 2018, the United Nations said that the fashion industry causes around 10% of global greenhouse gas emissions. The UN said the industry uses more energy than the airplane and shipping industries combined. Jen Mason is the owner of Underground Vintage in Lewis, Delaware, a town on the Atlantic coast. She said that clothes in the store that do not get sold are provided to local people. They use the material for different purposes, such as making blankets. Unsold clothes never go to waste, Mason said.
We're a coastal community, so we're all about, we're always thinking about how to be sustainable. And we also live on a peninsula. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it takes a lot of resources to get stuff out and back to here. So we're very much thinking about how to give something a new life.
Large fashion companies are beginning to join the used clothing movement. Levi's Second Hand is a new program from Levi Strauss & Company, the blue jeans manufacturer. The program buys back worn jeans to repurpose and resell them. The Fashion Industry Charter for Climate Action is an agreement under the UN to reduce greenhouse gases. Organizations that sign the agreement promise to create fewer gases linked to climate change. But many people buying clothing are hoping to help the environment by looking to the past. A recent report in Utah's Deseret News notes that 20th century fashion is currently the most popular in Utah's used clothing market. DeLorean 88 is a vintage store in Washington, D.C. Much of the store's clothing comes from the 1990s and early 2000s. The store carries mostly t-shirts, many with band logos and sports teams. One t-shirt features the faces of all the members of the 1996 Chicago Bulls, including Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen, the team's stars. Another shirt is from the rap music performer Eminem, after his first album released in 1999. Michael Diaz works at the shop. He said customers have come in and noticed shirts their parents might have had.
A store like this is just—it's nostalgia for a lot of people. Like, they just like, yo, they rather have this, like, a shirt that had like 10 years of history, 20 years of history, rather wear that over a new shirt.
I'm Dan Novak.
Hello, this week on Ask a Teacher, we will answer a question from Jesus from Spain about the difference between never mind and it doesn't matter.
Hello, my name is Jesus, and I find the use of never mind and it doesn't matter sometimes confusing. Could you clear it up for me, please? Thank you from Spain.
Dear Jesus, thank you for your question. We will start with the expression never mind. Often, we use never mind as an imperative or command form to tell someone to leave a subject or topic alone. This is especially true if a request is not fulfilled or a question is left unanswered. For example, if you have a question like,
"Can you help me put away the groceries?"
and it goes unanswered, you can reply,
"Never mind, I will do it without you."
In this exchange, "never mind" is used as a command to mean ignore what was just asked or said. Another way we can use "never mind" is as a conjunction, a part of speech that joins together two ideas, clauses, or sentences. When used as a conjunction, "never mind" connects two options, the second option being the least likely or wanted. For example,
"I do not like traveling to work. There are too many people on the bus. Never mind that it takes 45 minutes to get there."
In this sentence, "never mind" acts the same as another conjunction in addition. In the above example, the second option is expressed as the worst part of traveling to work. "It doesn't matter" means that the subject or issue is not important. We can reword the sentence to understand it better.
"It does not matter to me."
The verb "matter" means to be of importance. So when we say "it doesn't matter," we are saying this issue or subject is not important. For example, if we are given a choice between two things and we say "it doesn't matter," we are saying that either choice is acceptable.
"Do you want coffee or tea?"
"It doesn't matter." Here, we are saying that the choices are unimportant, and we could enjoy either coffee or tea. Sometimes both of these expressions can be combined as follows.
"Never mind, it doesn't matter."
This sentence demonstrates our lack of interest in the subject and expresses that we do not care to talk about the situation any further. Please let us know if these explanations and examples have helped you, Jesus. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Faith Perlow.
And I'm Jill Robbins.
The Fall of the House of Usher, Part 2. Roderick Usher, whom I had known as a boy, was now ill, and had asked me to come to help him. When I arrived, I felt something strange and fearful about the great old stone house, about the lake in front of it, and about Usher himself. He appeared not like a human being, but like a spirit that had come back from beyond the grave. It was an illness, he said, from which he would surely die. He called his sickness fear. "I have," he said, "no fear of pain, but only the fear of its result, of terror. I feel that the time will soon arrive when I must lose my life and my mind and my soul together in some last battle with that horrible enemy, fear." I learned also, but slowly and through broken words with doubtful meaning, another strange fact about the condition of Usher's mind. He had certain sick fears about the house in which he lived, and he had not stepped out of it for many years. He felt that the house, with its gray walls and the quiet lake around it, had somehow, through the long years, gotten a strong hold on his spirit. He said, however, that much of the gloom which lay so heavily on him was probably caused by something more plainly to be seen, by the long-continued illness, indeed the coming death, of a dearly loved sister, his only company for many years.
Except for himself,
she was the last member of his family on earth. "When she dies," he said, with a sadness which I can never forget, "when she dies, I will be the last of the old, old family, the house of Usher." While he spoke, the Lady Madeline, for so she was called, passed slowly through a distant part of the room, and without seeing that I was there, went on. I looked at her with a complete and wondering surprise, and with some fear. And yet I found I could not explain to myself such feelings. My eyes followed her. When she came to a door and it closed behind her, my eyes turned to the face of her brother. But he had put his face in his hands, and I could see only that the thin fingers through which his tears were flowing were whiter than ever before. The illness of the Lady Madeline had long been beyond the help of her doctors. She seemed to care about nothing. Slowly her body had grown thin and weak, and often for a short period she would fall into a sleep like the sleep of the dead. So far she had not been forced to stay in bed, but by the evening of the day I arrived at the house. The power of her destroyer, as her brother told me that night, was too strong for her. I learned that my one sight of her would probably be the last I would have, that the lady, at least while living, would be seen by me no more. For several days following, her name was not spoken by either Usher or myself, and during this period I was busy with efforts to lift my friend out of his sadness and gloom. We painted and read together, or listened as if in a dream to the wild music he played. And so, as a warmer and more loving friendship grew between us, I saw more clearly the uselessness of all attempts to bring happiness to a mind from which only darkness came, spreading upon all objects in the world its never-ending gloom. I shall always remember the hours I spent with the master of the House of Usher. Yet I would fail in any attempt to give an idea of the true character of the things we did together. There was a strange light over everything. The paintings which he made me tremble, though I know not why. To tell of them is beyond the power of written words. If ever a man painted an idea, that man was Roderick Usher. For me, at least, there came out of his pictures a sense of fear and wonder. One of these pictures may be told, although weakly, in words. It showed the inside of a room where the dead might be placed, with low walls, white and plain. It seemed to be very deep under the earth. There was no door, no window, and no light or fire burned. Yet a river of light flowed through it, filling it with a horrible, ghastly brightness. I have spoken of that sickly condition of the senses, which made most music painful for Usher to hear. The notes he could listen to with pleasure were very few. It was this fact, perhaps, that made the music he played so different from most music.
but the wild beauty of his playing could not be explained. The words of one of his songs called The Haunted Palace I have easily remembered. In it I thought I saw, and for the first time, that Usher knew very well that his mind was weakening. This song told of a great house where a king lived, a palace, in a green valley, where all was light and color and beauty, and the air was sweet. In the palace were two bright windows through which people in the happy valley could hear music and could see smiling ghosts, spirits moving around the king. The palace door was of the richest material, in red and white. Through it came other spirits, whose only duty was to sing in their beautiful voices about how wise their king was. But a dark change came, the song continued. And now those who enter the valley see through the windows in a red light shapes that move to broken music, while through the door, now colorless, a ghastly river of ghosts laughing, but no longer smiling, rushes out forever. Our talk of this song led to another strange idea in Usher's mind. He believed that plants could feel and think, and not only plants, but rocks and water as well. He believed that the gray stones of his house and the small plants growing on the stones and the decaying trees had a power over him that made him what he was. Our books, the books which for years had fed the sick man's mind, were, as might be supposed, of the same wild character. Some of these books Usher sat and studied for hours. His chief delight was found in reading one very old book, written for some forgotten church, telling of the watch over the dead. At last, one evening, he told me that the Lady Madeline was alive no more. He said he was going to keep her body for a time in one of the many vaults inside the walls of the building. The worldly reason he gave for this was one with which I felt I had to agree. He had decided to do this because of the nature of her illness, because of the strange interest and questions of her doctors, and because of the great distance to the graveyard where members of his family were placed in the earth. We too carried her body to its resting place. The vault in which we placed it was small and dark. In ages past it must have seen strange and bloody scenes. It lay deep below that part of the building where I myself slept. The thick door was of iron, and because of its great weight made a loud, hard sound when it was opened and closed. As we placed the Lady Madeline in this room of horror, I saw for the first time the great likeness between brother and sister, and Usher told me then that they were twins. They had been born on the same day. For that reason, the understanding between them had always been great, and the tie that held them together very strong. We looked down at the dead face one last time, and I was filled with wonder. As she lay there, the Lady Madeline looked not dead, but asleep, still soft and warm, though to the touch, cold as the stones around us.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.